This is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast, episode 24. In the last episode, I talked about some of the issues parents of kids with special needs might have with getting a diagnosis of sensory processing disorder, SPD, or even finding out about SPD in the first place. If you listen to that episode, which was episode number 23, and it cut off after 9 minutes, go back and try again. I have corrected the issue, and the full 15 or 16 minutes are now on and should be working. I'm not sure what happened. Somewhere between recording the episode and uploading it, some of it was lost. Only part of the episode made it through initially. So, in that episode, I discussed some of the difficulties that parents have of getting answers to questions, especially when their child is having some issues with sensory processing. Not everyone knows about this, and many pediatricians are not willing to talk about it with parents, or they may not know about it. Parents are often left to their own defenses to try and figure out what is going on with their child. For this episode, however, I will be discussing a topic that pediatricians are definitely aware of, which is the issue of lead poisoning in kids. In fact, many pediatricians will request a blood test for infants and toddlers to check the level of lead in their blood. Experts can agree that no amount of lead in their blood is safe for anyone. Unborn babies, babies that are already born, and young children are the most susceptible to effects of lead exposure. As early intervention providers, we have a responsibility to know about the effects of lead exposure in infants and toddlers. While we're not able to diagnose this, we need to be aware of it so we can make sure the families that we work with are aware of it as well. Family education is part of the job in early intervention. We don't have to know everything about lead issues, but we should be able to help refer people to their pediatricians if we suspect there may be lead in the home environment, or if they may have been exposed to lead at some point. Also, if you have a child with lead in their blood, you need to figure out where it is coming from right away and have it removed from the environment as much as possible. The Environmental Defense Fund, or the EDF, just released a report from their study on lead in baby food this month, June 2017. The EDF evaluated data that has been collected by the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. from 2003 to 2013. The Food and Drug Administration has a program called the Total Diet Study that has been tracking metals, pesticides, and nutrients in food since the 1970s. I won't get into this today, but the FDA has reports on their site for public viewing that have information on foods they've been tracking for all these years. You can take a look for yourself. I have provided a link to their website in the show notes for today. But for today, I want to stick with the lead because it has been proven to directly cause behavioral problems, low IQ, anemia, which is associated with low levels of oxygen in the blood or red blood cells, headaches, stomach aches, constipation, and many other symptoms. Because lead travels in the bloodstream, it can affect basically anything where blood travels in your body, including internal organs and the brain, which are highly susceptible to damage, especially in young kids. Babies and kids' bodies don't have the ability to filter out lead, or other toxins for that matter, effectively. So they are at a higher risk for issues from the lead exposure because the lead can stay in their body longer and cause damage to things that are still trying to develop. The study by the Environmental Defense Fund found that 20% of baby food samples had detectable levels of lead. They tested 2,164 baby food samples. It also found that 14% of other food samples had detectable levels of lead. This included 10,064 samples of other food. The most common baby foods that had detectable levels of lead were from highest to lowest, starting with root vegetables, then cookies, and finally fruit juices. For the fruit juices, 89% of the grape juice samples had detectable levels of lead. However, in the other fruit juices, such as mixed fruit, apple, and pear, between 45 and 67% of the samples detected lead also. To give a better visual on what this means, 89% of the grape juice samples is 89% out of 44 samples of grape juice. So for me, it was easier to do the math and determine that basically 39 out of the 44 samples had detectable levels of lead. Then 74 out of 111 samples of the mixed fruit juice, 24 out of 44 samples of apple juice, and 20 out of 44 samples of pear juice had lead in them. For the cookies they tested, 64% of arrowroot cookies, or 28 out of 44 samples, and 47% of the teething biscuits, or 20 out of 43 samples, had detectable levels of lead. And finally, for the root vegetables, both sweet potatoes and carrots had detectable amounts of lead. Sweet potatoes were at 86% of the samples, or 37 out of 44, and for the carrots, 43%, or 19 out of 44 samples. It was also noted that the samples of the baby food versions of apple juice, grape juice, and carrots had detectable lead more often than the regular versions of these juices that were not specifically geared towards babies. According to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, the maximum daily intake level of lead is 6 micrograms per day. This limit was set back in 1993. It was estimated by the Environmental Protection Agency in 2017 that over 5% of children between the ages of 2 and 6 years old have more than the 6 micrograms per day of lead in their diet. That is over 1 million kids that are over the limit set by the FDA 24 years ago. Now, I know I've been throwing around quite a bit of numbers and percentages on this, but I wanted to give those in case some of you listening want that specific information. What it basically comes down to is that our food has lead in it, and lead is bad for us. It is especially bad for kids because of their smaller bodies and developing brains. Given that we know that even low levels of lead in our blood can lower the IQ for kids, and that so many kids have higher lead levels, this is a serious problem. Normally, when we think of lead contamination, we're talking about lead in the water systems, in paints, and in dirt or soil. The contamination of lead in our food could potentially come from the soil that the food is grown in, or possibly in the packaging or handling procedures at the warehouses where the foods are processed. Speaking of the soil, this is one of the places we typically think of as a source of lead contamination. However, paint and water are also common places where we have found lead. Before 1978 in the United States, people used oil-based paint to paint their houses, which contained lead in it. Lead was removed from paint after that, but any houses that still have the original coat of paint in or on the house could be a potential source of lead exposure to kids. This includes paint chips that come off windowsills or the house itself. Also, the dirt in the yard could be contaminated with lead from the paint chipping off onto the ground outside. I've met with families who had high levels of lead in their blood, the whole family, and they had not only the parents, but a couple of young kids and a baby living in the house. The lead was discovered to be in their front yard, which was mostly just dirt because it was an older neighborhood, and it was in the city. The grass didn't grow too well there for whatever reason. This was a big problem because when the family would walk up through their front yard to the house, the dirt from the front yard would be carried into the home from their shoes, where the kids were playing on the floor along with their toys and everything else. The lead would get onto their skin, and because kids don't have the best hand washing skills, they were probably ingesting it from having it on their hands when they eat as well. The solution was to have the yard remediated, which at this time included removing a small layer of dirt from the yard, and I believe planting grass seed after that. I don't know long-term how this worked out for that particular family. I know that I was very concerned for the kids in the home, and I wished that they had the means to move out of the home at the time. At first, the family didn't really understand the issue with having lead in the yard, and it was most likely in the paint in the house as well, because it was an older home. So we had to talk about the dangers of having the lead exposure with the kids and possible concerns of lower IQ or other behavioral problems later on. whomever was monitoring their blood lead levels was not actually providing them with the education on what the possible effects were. They just informed them that they needed to remove the lead. Lead can also be found in dishes, especially older ones, toys like antique toys that were painted with lead paint, or some of the newer toys that are sometimes made in China have been found to have lead as well. Another area that is known to be contaminated with lead is water. This past year in Michigan, they had an issue with their water system that affected thousands of people in that area. Lead can leach out from older water pipes and contaminate water coming into homes that way. The story in Michigan was all over the news in the United States recently, but I'm sure they are not the only place to have issues with lead in the water systems. We rely on state and federal regulations to keep our drinking water safe from contaminations. However, you can add another layer of safety in your own drinking water by filtering the water out of the tap before drinking it. Many people, especially in the United States, are familiar with Brita filters. I used this filter for years, just assuming it was doing a good job, but I never really looked into it until about a year ago. I found out about this other filter system called Berkey filters, B-E-R-K-E-Y. It is actually not just a filter, but is also considered a purification system. I have links to both of these products in the notes for today, and you can find the Amazon link for Berkey on my website as well. You can check the comparison chart of what each one says they filter out of the water. The Berkey list is much more detailed and a lot longer than the Brita list. The Berkey says it can filter out over 99% of heavy metals from the water. This includes lead as well. Other things they say that they can remove over 99% of include viruses, bacteria, E. coli, chlorine, pesticides, and certain pharmaceutical drugs. There is an extensive list, along with scientific reports as evidence, posted on their website about everything that they actually include. When we ordered this filter, I also ordered a water testing kit, which allowed me to test the water from my own faucet. I was happy to find out that none of the tests showed anything to be concerned about, so at least at that time, the water system in my area seemed to be up to par. However, I do feel more confident in having this water filter system that I know is adding an extra layer of safety just in case. There are times when cities around us issue temporary boil orders on the water because of some issue with the water system. However, by the time they have discovered whatever the issue is, there has potentially been some level of exposure to the contaminated water already. I'm not a salesperson for Berkey, and there may be some other systems out there that are comparable. I found this one and I like it, so I wanted to share what I know about it. And I personally use it in my own home, so I can vouch for it in that way as well. When we switched from the Brita to the Berkey, I could actually tell a difference in the way the water tasted. It is more expensive, but has been worth it for my peace of mind. Also, we figured out, based on the amount of gallons the filters can effectively filter out, and how often our family uses it, that our filters will last for about 10 years before we need to replace them. So it is worth the investment, in my opinion. Anyway, if you decide to get one, please link through my website to Amazon. Any shopping you do there will give me a kickback, which will only help me continue to do these shows for you guys. I don't really have information about the water systems in countries outside of the U.S., so if anyone has information to add about the country that you live in, please let me know so I can pass it on to other listeners. I would also be interested to hear about issues of lead contamination in other countries as well, not just in water systems, but in the food or soil. If you have anything to add to this discussion, please send me an email at Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, at mymidwesttherapy.com. A final note for this episode on lead. My husband and I started our own family garden about 3 years ago. We purchased a small plot of land in a small town near where we live. Initially, we had considered trying to get our land or our garden certified as organic through the national standards for the U.S. When looking into this, we discovered that one of the requirements for the land was that you had to show that none of the prohibited substances from their list had been used on the property for 3 years before the first crop harvest. We had just purchased the land and didn't really have a way to prove this. We just knew from talking to neighbors that nobody had lived there for 5 to 10 years before that. However, we decided not to pursue the organic certification anyway, based on the fact that nowhere in their requirements did they have anything about testing the soil. To me, this is one of the most important things to do because I wanted to know what, if anything, was in the soil before I plant seeds there and then eat the things that I planted. Since lead is known to be in soils, and this is one of the ways that lead gets into our foods, why wouldn't you want to test and see if lead is there before planting food? So we had our soil tested on our own accord and for our own desire for the information. The point here is that while I personally prefer to buy food that is labeled organic over non-organic when possible, when it's something that I can't grow myself, I still now understand that even the organic foods may not be what we imagine that they are. But how would we know? Because no one is required to have the soil tested before growing crops and selling them as either organic or non-organic. We don't have the means at this point in time to grow all of the food for our family to eat, but at least we are able to supplement with some of the foods that we can grow ourselves. To follow up with the results of our soil testing, we received the list of what and how much was found in our soil, but we haven't been able to find any place that can tell us what the results actually mean. From what we've been able to search on our own, we felt confident enough to go ahead and plant there and eat what we've been able to grow. Now, I'm not an expert on planting and farming by any means, but I would say it is something that anyone could do, and if your soil has higher level of contaminants in it, there are options with things like raised beds and containers to keep the foods out of the contaminated soils. It may not be much, but it is better than nothing, and at least you know exactly where that food is coming from and what you have or haven't done to it as far as treating with pesticides and herbicides. This episode seemed to take a few different turns, but hopefully it will open your mind to thinking about what you can do for yourself and your family to make your home possibly a little healthier. You can now follow me on Instagram. My username there is milestonespodcast, all one word. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.